Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Court of the Trashy Royals, where we gather each week to reveal and revel in the tales of our betters behaving badly. My name is Stacy.
Hey friends, Alicia here, and this week we have a really, really special treat for you. You may recall from our episode about Queen Victoria's trashy Hanoverian uncles many moons ago that it was the death of Princess Charlotte, granddaughter of George III, and daughter of future George IV, that died in childbirth, setting off the race between George III's other sons to marry and produce an heir with a quickness. We focused mostly on Victoria's parents in that episode, but we're going to bring in a friend today into Trashy Royals to get all the details of the parents of the doomed Princess Charlotte, George IV, and Caroline of Brunswick.
Welcome to Sam, co-host of the rollickingly fun podcast I'm Horrified, with her friend Allie, who is not with us today. However, I'm Horrified covers a range of topics, including a lot of historical people and incidents that you have to dig a little bit to fully unearth. Sam recently covered Caroline of Brunswick and her appallingly bad marriage at I'm Horrified, and we loved it so much that we asked her to join us for an overview of this big-time trashiness.
Let us anon to Caroline of Brunswick with Sam from I'm Horrified. Welcome, Sam, to Trashy Royals.
Alicia and Stacy, I'm so thrilled to be here with you and your listeners today. I'm so excited to bring you this story. I love stories of royals. I love everything that this podcast is about. I like to tell my own version of them over on I'm Horrified. And when I stumbled on this story for my horror honeys, I just felt like it was trashy enough to bring to this audience as well.
A million times that. It is so, it's brutal. It's just perfect.
And that's what we want, brutality.
Oh, yes.
Sam, tell us all about Caroline.
Yes, definitely. I'm so excited to talk with y'all today about a couple who did not get along for 1 second of their lives. And specifically, we're going to talk about what a very sheltered royal might do in her eat, pray, love era. So today, I am bringing you the story of King George IV and his wife, to both of their chagrin, Caroline of Brunswick, who in my heart is really the star. Alicia, you gave a great, I think, intro, and I'm sure that over here you guys all know all about the time period, but I'll just give like a little bit of an anchor of like when we're talking about in the long history of kings named George.
That's absolutely perfect. It's been a hot minute since we've talked about it on Trashy Royals, so pretend we know nothing.
There you go. So just to give you an idea of the timing here, King George IV, throughout this story, is Crown Prince George. Really, that's what he is for most of this marriage. And he's the son, of course, of King George III and Queen Charlotte. If you've watched Bridgerton, if you're a Bridgerton girly, which I certainly am, Queen Charlotte is the queen that that is played so delightfully by Golda Rochevelle, they gave her her own spinoff. That's Charlotte. Another timeline anchor for you folks, George III is the king we're fighting against in the American Revolution. So for any Americans in the audience, that's him. And like you were just mentioning, Alicia, George IV is going to be the uncle of Queen Victoria, who goes on to be the grandmother of all of Europe, who I know you're all very, very familiar with. But before any of that, we have little Caroline, born in 1768 to Charles William Ferdinand, Duke of Brunswick-Wolfenbüttel. And I'm so sorry to anyone who's German for my pronouncing of Wolfenbüttel. It's got the umlaut over the U, so I just, that threw me.
Typically, we just say, that's probably how that's pronounced.
We visited Denmark last week and had a nice listener who let us know that most of pronouncing Danish is like talking with hot potatoes in your mouth. So we do the best we can.
Exactly, exactly. And that region of Brunswick is located in now like northwestern Germany. And so Caroline is the daughter of him, Charles William Ferdinand, and his wife, Princess Augusta of Great Britain, who is actually the eldest sister of King George III. We love a cousin marriage in the royal family. We just love it. Caroline is the third of seven children. Her parents are second cousins. And throughout this era, German royalty and English royalty are super tightly linked. All the Hanoverians are like mostly German. And it's believed that unfortunately their familiar bond led to three of her four brothers being born with significant learning or physical disabilities. Caroline, tragically, she does not grow up with an example of what I would call perfect love in her home. Her parents are absolutely an arranged marriage. And her mother just like forever is like more English than she ever is of Brunswick. She prefers their food. She prefers their culture. She really never adapts. So you could say that's pretty bad. What's worse is that her father's just having a ton of affairs. He's the kind of guy with a official royal mistress. So that's the level of affair we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
It is. And tragically, Princess Augusta, she's not into it, and it makes home life for their children quite stressful. Caroline told a friend, Lady Charlotte Campbell, that, quote, "My father was most entirely attached to a lady for 30 years who was, in fact, his mistress. She was the beautifulest creature and the cleverest, but though my father continued to pay my mother all possible respect, my poor mother could not suffer this attachment. And the consequence was, I did not know what to do between them. When I was civil to one, I was scolded by the other, and was very tired of being shuttlecock between them." If all
what a term, shuttlecocked.
I know, right? If all just children of divorce listening could take a deep breath together for this moment of like, we've been there, we know that feeling.
Yeah.
But that's even more complicated. Like, you don't want to disappoint dad, but mom, mistress, yikes.
Well, and yeah, they're still married. So it's presumably part-time living together, at least in the palace or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they have seven kids. So clearly they're interacting with each other in some way. But yeah, it seems to me like she was really kind of a daddy's girl, but clearly she also has some level of sympathy for her mother there, where it's like, mom just can't deal with the mistress and that's not her fault. Like, that's just the way it is. But yeah, not a great picture of romance for Caroline.
But maybe a bit of foreshadowing.
Honestly, yeah, a lot of foreshadowing. We say we marry our fathers, you know, that's what they always say. Caroline is not especially well educated. She can understand English and German, but it's told that she prefers to dictate her letters rather than write them, which is so nobility coded. I can't get over it. And she's also extremely sheltered, even for the standards of the time. She's rarely allowed out of her home. And even when she is, to say like a sibling's wedding or some kind of family event, she's like never allowed to dance. She's always stuck at the table with the older ladies, just hanging out.
So they're literally putting Caroline in a corner.
They really are.
Aw.
And if only Patrick Swayze was there, but at this time, he's not. And she is described by many people as lively and pretty, but kind of what good is that when you're stuck in your house?
Right. It sounds a little similar to the Kensington system that Victoria was.
A little bit. Which,
I wonder if this is just sort of noble parenting
precursor.
At the time was just awful.
Yeah, just generally, the system was awful. She's growing up in all this, but I'd like to tell a funny story that kind of gives you a good idea of Caroline's vibe. It was relayed to Francis William Wynne by one of the attendants in Caroline's home, and then that story is later on told in a book called An Injured Queen by Lewis Meville, and that was from like 1912. So here's the story. It's absolute legend stuff. When she was 16, a great ball was given to which the Duchess would not let her go, in spite of her pleadings. The ball had only just begun when a messenger came post-haste to the Duke and Duchess to say the princess had taken seriously ill. The assembly at once broke up, and the Duke and Duchess returned without delay to the apartment of their daughter, whom they found in bed screaming. Pressed by her mother to say what was the matter with her, the girl said it was impossible for her to conceal the cause of her agony. "I am in labor," she declared, "and entreat you, madam, to send for an accoucheur immediately," which I guess is like a male midwife. When at length the accoucheur arrived, the princess wiped the livid coloring from her face and jumped out of bed, saying with a hearty laugh, "Now, madam, will you keep me another time from a ball?"
Wow. So her parents were at the ball.
Yes.
And she basically
wouldn't let her go.
Brought him back. Okay. Woof.
Well, that'll teach them.
That will teach them. And it actually, later on, there's rumors that Caroline had like a secret child while she was still a teenager. But those rumors come from this moment where she faked going into labor to make her parents mad.
Unbelievable. Can you, like, the scandal they must have been envisioning during that, like, hour or whatever it took to get the midwife there?
Teenagers, am I right?
Hey, that's what you get when you keep Caroline from a party.
Yep.
So you can imagine, when Caroline hears that a marriage is being arranged from her, she's totally on board, pretty much as long as it gets her out of her house. And what a man she has managed to catch. None other than the Crown Prince of England, George. He's only 6 years older than her, which is not bad. He is handsome and charming. Well, she's never met him, but she's been told he's handsome and charming and a great guy. Unfortunately, there is a lot Caroline does not know about her seemingly perfect prince. And if we want to take a moment before we launch into everything going on with George, this might be a moment to refill your water and take a breather and come back.
Yeah, I feel like there was a real strong ellipses at the end of that. We're going to take a quick break and we are going to come back to how that courtship and marriage goes.
We'll see you on the flip.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call, you talk to one of them, they stay anonymous, I can't hang up, that's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh, somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today, Beautiful Anonymous.
So it turns out the Prince of Wales, future George IV, is not quite the picture Caroline is hoping for.
Not quite. No, what poor Caroline does not know when she agrees to this arranged marriage is that George has experienced basically the opposite of her upbringing. So first of all, his parents like each other. Charlotte and George III have an unusually happy marriage, and their 15 kids prove that. They really did, like, enjoy spending time together. Secondly, spending time, in quotes.
Yeah.
he has not been sheltered at all in the way that Caroline has. So George III is, like, quite a conservative man just in his temperament. He leaves his life quite by the books. But when George turns 18 and is given his own house, he goes buck wild. He's quickly a heavy drinker. He's a lover of many women, and he's got expensive taste. When George turns 21 in 1783, he receives a grant of £60,000, which is equivalent to about 11 million pounds today.
I mean, it's nice to be a prince.
When I turned 21, I would have loved to get 11 million pounds. That really would have been better than what I did get, which was one drink from a bar in downtown Boston.
Even a fraction of that amount would have really been life-changing for me.
Yeah, right? We're not greedy here. We would have taken 1 million pounds.
Absolutely.
And ladies, here's the thing. Not only does he get that 1 million pounds, he also gets an annual income of 50,000 pounds, which is equivalent to 9.5 million pounds today. So he gets 11 million, here you go, plus almost 10 million a year is what he gets when he's 21.
It's weird that there was a revolution, right?
It's too bad that this is not a meritocracy and you can just apply for that job.
I agree. But for George, that's not going to be enough because his stables alone cost what is now 6 million pounds a year.
Holy so, cats.
From his yearly budget, he's down to 3 million immediately.
Just after the horses.
Just through the horses. And the other thing about George is he loves to spoil his wife. That's right, his wife.
Oh, God.
He's not married to Caroline, but soon after George receives this massive inheritance at 21, he falls deeply in love with a woman called Maria Fitzherbert.
Oh, there's always a Maria.
She is a commoner. She is 6 years older than him. She is twice widowed, and she is a Roman Catholic.
Wow.
She is not the ideal bride for a crown prince of England. Really, if you were to write down everything that would make a not ideal bride, Maria Fitzherbert checks most of those boxes.
Yes.
But nevertheless, Prince George is in love. He's determined to marry her. He doesn't care about the Act of Settlement of 1701, which bars the spouse of any Catholic from succeeding the throne. He's the crown prince, so that's a problem. And he doesn't care about the Royal Marriages Act of 1772, which prohibits a marriage without the king's consent. Doesn't matter. They go through with a marriage ceremony at her house in Mayfair.
Just singing some Fleetwood Mac, going his own way.
He really was.
Like you do.
He said, "I don't need your permission, Dad." And Parliament said, "Actually, you did need his permission." Oh. But I will say this. To Maria Fitzherbert, she is the prince's like canonical and true wife. She believes like we've been married in front of a priest. Like it sort of doesn't matter that it's against these laws. It really does matter. But she's fine with it. And she's also fine with the union remaining a secret for now because she knows that how effed everyone's going to be if this comes out. So she's happy to be in the background, knowing in her heart and in the eyes of the Lord that she is the prince's true wife.
And no one has ever learned anything from Elizabeth Woodville. Please continue.
Oh, Elizabeth Woodville. Almost worked out for her, kind of.
It didn't till it didn't.
That should be the tagline of a lot of these royal shows. It worked out until it didn't. So poor George, living fast and loose has its consequences, especially when you're the Crown Prince of England. And George is plunged into debt by his exorbitant lifestyle. His father is refusing to assist him. Again, George III's a pretty conservative guy. He's like, "I don't get it."
And so, no one needs this many horses, son.
Literally. And so embarrassing, Prince George loses his house and has to move in with his girlfriend slash wife. Humiliating.
Oh my God.
But the prince has a lot of political allies because they know that he's going to be the king one day. They want to stay on his good side. And so they propose to relieve his debts with a parliamentary grant, basically like a one-time payout from parliament. However, a lot of people are realizing, I mean, George is married to this woman. Like, it's becoming more and more obvious. And a revelation like that is not going to incentivize parliament to help him out, because if he is, he's kind of barred from ever becoming king, and it's going to cause this whole bunch of shenanigans.
Yeah, my question is, what's the trade-off for the buyout?
Yeah.
He's lost his home. Like, he's clearly a financial disaster, and they're about to try to fill that hole, so he's a money pit for taxpayers. Like, This is not great.
It's not what you want out of your future king. I'll admit that. But for these parliamentary, like for these members of parliament, they probably just want the future king in their back pocket. They'll do what it takes to elevate him if it means that they're getting an easy ride. But a lot of parliament that's not in the back pocket are suspicious that something's going on. George asks his friend, who's a Whig leader named Charles James Fox, to just say like, oh no, that's not true. Charles James Fox makes a little bit too big of a statement about it, and it actually ends up kind of offending Maria Fitzherbert. She was like, you didn't have to say we were married, but you didn't have to say like, it's so unbelievable George would ever marry Maria Fitzherbert. She was like, that hurt my feelings. To which I'm like, you probably shouldn't have married him. Mm. So it ends up having to be another member of parliament who makes another statement in a more low-key way. Maria Fitzherbert gets back on board, and parliament finally grants the prince some money to settle his debts and get his house back.
Huzzah!
I mean, what a mess.
We love it when a good guy wins, right, everyone?
What a zany, zany mess. Okay.
I know.
Good to be a prince.
You've offended my wife by insisting she is not my wife. Very unhappy.
It's a tightrope to walk with your wife, not wife. Poor George.
There's so
poor,
many poor shades George. Of delusion in this story.
I know. poor George. He's not able to resume his luxurious lifestyle, however, because his father's health begins to decline. I will say to everyone else, this is probably the other thing you know about George III. Modern doctors think he maybe had porphyria, which is like a disease of the liver, or he was maybe bipolar. We can't obviously diagnose someone who lived hundreds of years ago. In any case, he's in a state where he is unable to rule. And this state lasts about 4 months at this point.
Did no one learn anything from Henry VI? Sorry, it's so much. It's so, like all of these stories always come back around and around and around and over again.
I know. It's crazy. You would think they would have put something on the books on this, but they haven't. And so Parliament's having these long sessions that are dubiously legal because really the king is supposed to open Parliament,
oh,
but
sure.
The king's not able to do anything at this moment. So Parliament's like, we're meeting. Are we even allowed to meet? We're not sure. They're trying to figure out who should be regent in the king's place and during this 4 month period. Obviously, Crown Prince George is like high on the list of choices, but a lot of people don't trust him.
Sure.
And they want to place limits on him. They want to be like, okay, you're the regent, but you can't appoint anyone to office because we think you're going to just appoint like all of your friends.
Right, cronies.
You know, you're the regent, but you can't give yourself any more money.
It is amazing that the British have consistently decided not to write their constitution down. I see so many avenues to clear this stuff up.
Absolutely. And they don't do it. And frankly, Prince George is offended that there would be any limits on his regency were he to take it on.
Of course.
Luckily, King George recovers. Like I said, it's about a 4 month period he's unable to rule. So King George recovers kind of before they have to do anything official. But it's very clear to everyone, it is time for the prince to get serious. Clue the Legally Blonde musical for anyone that's familiar with that reference. George spends some more time racking up debts, and then finally the king gives him an ultimatum. He says, you're going to marry your cousin and settle down. And George says, fine. Re-enter our lovely Caroline. Mm-hmm. She is summoned from her home, which she has basically never been allowed to leave, to become the new Crown Princess of England. There is a diplomat named Lord Malmesbury who arrives in Brunswick to escort Caroline to her new life in Britain. And in his diary, Malmesbury records his reservations about Caroline's suitability as the bride of a prince. He thinks she lacks judgment and maybe some decorum, and maybe she's a little tactless, and maybe she speaks her mind a little too readily, and she acts a little indiscreetly.
Maybe it's the first time she's been out of the house, and how do I know how to act?
Exactly. And he also says she has neglected to wash or change her dirty clothes, which, in her defense, in the COVID era, when none of us were leaving the house, How often were we changing our leggings? Not that often.
1,000,000%. Also, like a lot of those things, I'm sure not the speaking her mind or not bathing or changing clothes. A lot of those things could be very simpatico with, you know, Playboy Prince George. So,
yeah, there you go. And Malmesbury does have a couple nice things to say. He mentions that as they're traveling, they pass by the front lines of the Napoleonic Wars, because those are also happening right now.
Sure.
And there's like, they can hear quite loud and nearby cannon fire. And Malmesbury notes that like all of the other ladies in the party are very scared. And Caroline kind of stiff upper lip. She takes it better than, you know, a lot of the people who haven't been near a war before. So he gives her some props.
But she's lived through mom and mistress.
Yeah.
Have you talk about a war.
You seen what I'm leaving behind? This is
exactly.
Fine.
Exactly. And so on meeting his future wife for the first time, Prince George calls for a glass of brandy. He is evidently a little disappointed in the woman he is about to marry. Similarly, Caroline tells Malmesbury the prince is very fat and he's nothing as handsome as his portrait. Sparks are not flying.
Man.
Sparks are not flying in this moment.
Hans Holbein strikes again. No, I know it's not, but...
From the Hans Holbein school of portraiture comes whatever this portrait was. On top of that, George has sent a letter to Maria Fitzherbert and says it's over between them. And apparently he had told his brother that like it was pretty mutual. They were both kind of happy with the dissolution of this marriage, in quotes. But George still has brought along his mistress, Frances Villars, the Countess of Jersey. So he has.
Sorry, hold up. Hold up.
Yeah, a lot of women.
Future Georgie IV.
Yes.
Has now new wife,
yes.
Caroline, on
yep.
the hook. Said, Maria, I'm done with you. But really, nobody worry because Frances Villiers is hanging out.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had the mistress on his secret wife, and now he's got the mistress on his public wife. Yes. And of course, because this is the way they always do it, Frances has been appointed Caroline's Lady of the Bedchamber. So she's going to be close at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, throughout their first meal together, the prince was appalled by Caroline's garrulous nature and her jibes at the expense of Lady Jersey. Caroline is making those jibes because George is obviously having a thing with Lady Jersey. So, of course, I'm going to insult her at this dinner we're at.
As is my right.
As is my right. The happy couple are married less than 2 weeks after they first meet in 1795. Really quick courtship on that one.
I feel like courtship needs a lot of air quotes all around it. Wow.
Oh, yeah. And in a letter to a friend, the prince claims that the couple only had sexual intercourse 3 times. Twice the first night of the marriage, once the second night. He says it requires no small effort to conquer my aversion and overcome the disgust of her person. Caroline says George is so drunk on the wedding night, he passed the greatest part of the night under the grate, where he fell and where I left him.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't pick him up. It
yeah.
wasn't worth my time. It is kind of funny to me that like it kind of is the same as it ever was.
Yeah,
people are
absolutely.
nosy gossips. And if you're at court, you want to know it all.
Yeah. And if you put yourself on a pedestal of here I am, the person who is doing all the things, people are going to look at you doing all the things.
Yep.
Can you imagine, though, having your mistress and your future bride like just sitting next to each other? Like, come on. Didn't you learn anything from Henry VIII, buddy? Ladies in waiting in your court isn't going to go great.
Not going to work.
There and then to be no lessons learned.
And then to be like, you were kind of rude to my mistress at dinner tonight, like just out of pocket. Crazy.
Especially after Caroline's childhood navigating this exact dynamic with her parents. Like, can you imagine being the poor schmuck who has to like bring out the soup?
Yeah.
You know, and set it at
each. Caroline's the magic token that gets George the money.
Yeah.
You don't make Caroline mad.
All I want is some kind of miniseries from the POV of Malmesbury, who is that guy that has to go get Caroline and then introduce them and is hearing the both of them be like, I hate this schmuck, and has to stand between them like, oh, I'm sure it's fine.
Let's just walk down this aisle, shall we?
Much like George had to. So 9 months after the wedding, luckily, Caroline gives birth to their daughter, Charlotte. And it is, of course, the only child that they will share together because they only spent the night together right when they got married. Just 3 days after Charlotte's birth, George makes out a new will. He leaves all his property to Maria Fitzherbert, my wife, and
he's
one shilling. At the moment, he should have been happiest with Caroline because she just gave him a beautiful daughter.
Absolutely.
Who I think they did both love. It's, nope, remembering my old wife.
What is Frances Villiers doing? Is she like, what up, George?
I feel like this also makes him a bigamist. At least in his heart.
Like, yeah, at least in
times
the eyes of the Lord.
Squared. Like, what the heck?
It's not a secret to anyone that George and Caroline are very unhappily married. Caroline is not shy about her hatred of Lady Jersey. The press are not shy about what they think, which is that Caroline's pretty clearly the wronged party and George is gambling his life away. The press always hate George. And it is true, but it makes George pretty mad. So 4 months after their daughter's birth, George writes to Caroline, "We have unfortunately been obliged to acknowledge to each other that we cannot find happiness in our union. Let me therefore beg you to make the best of a situation unfortunate for us both." And so from that moment on, and pretty much before that, the two keep completely separate residences, and it's really understood by everyone that they are not together in any real way.
That was a whole lot of words to say I'm out.
Yeah, it was as polite as he could be, I think.
Yeah, and not out in, like, I guess, like, Parliament's never going to let us divorce, but yeah, like, let's just, okay, this is terrible. Go live your own life.
Yeah. So Caroline gets Montague House in Greenwich Park all to herself, and she starts living a not too bad life. Her daughter, Charlotte, as a royal baby, is not really raised by her parents, but instead a series of governesses. But in the summer, Charlotte's residence is very close to Montague House, so Caroline's able to visit her very often. Allegedly, Caroline is feeling very freed from her marital bonds, which we know George was already feeling. So she's flirting with a few men. She's maybe having some brief relationships, all allegedly, but that's the word on the street. She has plenty of time to herself, and so she decides to adopt 8 or 9 poor children that are then fostered out to people in the district. So just to make it clear what that means, basically, she hears about children who are in need of, like, care and support. So she takes on the burden of, like, paying for them, but they live with other families in the area. So none of them are living under her roof, but basically she's, like, a patron for them paying for their life.
That sounds great, actually. As philanthropy goes, you know.
Absolutely. Very nice thing to do. But then she changes the model a little bit because when she adopts a 3-month-old boy named William Austin, she actually takes him into her home. So instead of fostering him out, he's living with her.
But so not being raised by governesses, like she is directly raising this infant.
He's living in her house. So I'm sure she still has a nurse and a
maid. He has help. She's the, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think she's changing diapers, but it is unusual that instead of being like, oh, I'm footing the bill for this kid, but it's living with a different family, the baby's living under her roof. And that is unusual for her. At this time, Caroline has a bestie, Lady Douglas, who lives next door with her husband, Lord John. They have some kind of falling out because all of a sudden, the Douglases have a lot to say about Caroline. Namely, she's been having a ton of affairs, and William Austin, that 3-month-old baby, is her biological son. Scandal.
Oh.
Wow.
So in 1806, there's a secret commission. It's known as the Delicate Investigation, which is just a great name. And it's set up to examine Lady Douglas's claims. So Lady Douglas testifies that, like, oh, Caroline told me that, you know, she was pregnant, that this little boy is her son, that Caroline's been very rude about the royal family, that she's been having affairs, all of this stuff. She names like 5 different men she's been having affairs with. But Caroline's servants all back up Caroline. They say like she has no men coming or going. She's never been pregnant. And that the child is the like true born son of a woman named Sophia Austin. And then Sophia Austin is summoned before the commissioners and she's like, yes, William is my child who I was unable to care for. So, you know, the Princess of Wales took my child in.
So can I, is it Is it conceivable that the Crown Prince or one of his political allies paid off the Douglases to make these allegations?
I think so. Why not? And I also think probably he wouldn't have even needed to, because the incentive would have just been, I'll be on the prince's good side if I talk a little trash about...
That's a good point. That's a good point.
You know, but I think it's perfectly conceivable that that might have been the case. So the commission finds Caroline innocent. Again, her all of her servants really stand with her and don't say anything if there was anything to say. But during all of this, Caroline is not permitted to see her daughter because of the scandal. And afterwards, her visits are restricted to about once a week and only in the presence of Caroline's own mother. Then something happens that's bad for England and arguably worse for Caroline, which is that King George III has another of his episodes, and this time he is permanently unable to rule, leading to Prince George being named his official regent and giving him the power to really mess with his wife, who, if you think about it, has not done anything that bad to him.
Excellent.
And this is the era, if you ever hear about like the Regency era of England, this is that. He's the regent, and he loves to gamble. So George restricts Caroline's access to Princess Charlotte even further. Caroline becomes more socially isolated because now members of high society are choosing all of George's parties over hers and not inviting her to theirs. And Caroline realizes, I gotta go on the offensive. So she begins essentially like a propaganda campaign against George, and she's aided by politicians who are ambitious and want to kind of like bet on her as the horse that's going to get them power later on. And so they write a letter, like a public letter to George from Caroline. They post in the newspaper saying like, please let me see our daughter. I want to be seeing her more and you're restricting access. This is, I mean, just imagine if Diana had written a letter in the press about seeing Harry and William more. It's a huge scandal.
It's kind of like Grimes and Elon, though. Like,
yeah, all those tweets going back and forth. Literally, it's that. And so then George leaks all of the testimony from the delicate investigation. Then the Caroline's friends leak all of the servants' testimony that's like, none of that's true.
Oh my God. People
are firmly on Caroline's side. They've always find her charming and way better than George, who they hate. And it turns out Princess Charlotte largely sides with her mother as well. Another fun cameo from this moment in history. Jane Austen writes of Caroline, and specifically of this public letter that she wrote, "Poor woman, I shall support her as long as I can, because she is a woman, and because I hate her husband."
Perfect.
A huge mood, an absolute banger from Jane. And as we let that sink in, this might be a good moment to take another break.
Excellent. Yes, yes.
Fantastic. Back in a minute.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album. Pop Apologists. Pop Apologists.
Okay, Sam, what happens next? What happens next?
Oh my goodness, here we go. I'm taking off my sweater because it's serious.
Yeah. This is open warfare between the regent and the future queen. I mean, this is incredible.
Yes. And so despite all this public support that Caroline is getting, the people are mostly on her side, but her life in England is just no good because her husband has all this power. And so she finally decides to leave. Her political allies aren't happy with her about this because they want to keep riding her coattails. And her daughter's unhappy with this because she's like, Mom, I would like to hang out. But Caroline is in her eat, pray, love era. She has to adventure. She has to go and see what life holds for her. She negotiates a deal with Parliament and she leaves the country for an annual allowance of what's about £3.5 million today.
That'll work.
Not bad. And she pieces out first to Brunswick, then Switzerland, and then she goes to Lake Como. And along the way, she hires a tall Italian man by the name of Bartolomeo Perigami.
Oh my God.
Don't read into how I'm saying this name. He's just a servant. He quickly rises to be the head of her household, Bartolomeo, But who knows what was going on between them?
I'm sure it was just meritocracy in action.
He's just really great at cleaning her pool. Likely they were perhaps more than head of household and Princess of Wales. From early 1816, she and Bartolomeo go on a cruise around the Mediterranean. They go to Sicily, where Bartolomeo obtains the Order of Malta and a barony to himself, which, how interesting that having Caroline as his mistress is doing all of this for him. At this point, Caroline and Bartolomeo are openly eating meals together, which is quite intimate for the usual servant-princess relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Together, they visit Malta, they go to Milos, Athens, Corinth, Constantinople, Nazareth. Caroline enters Jerusalem riding on a donkey in a convoy of camels.
This is the most romantic trip I've ever heard of.
It sounds so, I just went on a honeymoon not too long ago, and I wish I could redo it. I wish I could do the Bartolomeo trip instead. And so word on the street for everyone is that these two have got to be having an affair. It's just got to be that way. It seems obvious. But sadly, all good things must come to an end, and it ends in the saddest way possible. Caroline's daughter, Princess Charlotte, is beloved by all of England, and she's recently married a prince. But in giving birth to her first child, she and the baby had tragically passed away, leaving England without an heir and Caroline without her only child. George refused to write to Caroline to inform her. He left that to his new son-in-law, Leopold, to do. Leopold is obviously deep in grief in that he's just lost his wife and baby, so he needs a minute. And George does prioritize writing to the Pope. And by chance, the courier carrying that letter to the Pope runs into Caroline, and that's how she finds out the news that her only child, her beloved daughter, has passed away.
That has got to be a blow.
I think Jane Austen was right.
And she was so right about him. He sucks so bad. I hate him. Caroline is obviously devastated by this. And admittedly, on the more practical side of things, politically, she's in a lot of trouble because her real only hope of ever gaining her power back in England was to wait for her dumb husband to die so that her daughter could become queen and she would finally kind of have a voice again. Now that possibility is gone, there's kind of no other way for Caroline to enter back into the mix. And at this point, George just wants to be severed from Caroline officially. Like, you would think maybe he would take a breath on this one or even just let it be. He cannot. And so,
haven't you heard from Hamilton? He'll be back.
I'm just kidding.
That's actually a different king, but
that's his father. But still,
you got the joke. It runs in the family.
And boy, does it. At this time, because of just like the double standards of English separation law, a divorce is only legally possible if adultery by Caroline can be proven. And so investigators are sent to Milan to see what they can uncover about what Caroline's been doing. In London, Caroline's lawyer, Henry Brougham, hears this, and he's a little concerned that this Milan commission might be a threat to his employer, Caroline.
You think?
So he sends his brother James to Caroline's villa to kind of try to get a vibe check on how bad are things over here? Is there anything we can clean up? James writes back to his brother of Caroline and Bartolomeo. They are, to all appearances, man and wife. Never was anything so obvious. So at this time, testimonies that condemn Caroline as absolutely having this affair are collected from many witnesses, including former servants. But the government still kind of wants to prevent a mass scandal. They'd rather keep this under wraps. George is not popular himself, so we don't want this to go too crazy. And so they want to negotiate between George and Caroline. Caroline's like, you know what? I'm a little worried about this, and I do hate my stupid husband anyways. So I'll agree to this like more official separation in exchange for a little bit of money.
Sure.
And at this time, they're kind of debating, like, maybe we'll just call Caroline the Duchess of Cornwall and we'll, you know, it's very Anne of Cleves, very like, we'll give you a little bit of a lower title, but you'll still be pretty set. It'll look pretty good. As these negotiations are ongoing, Caroline travels to France, a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, she's making her way to England. She actually hadn't been planning to, but then King George III finally passes away. George and Caroline are now king and queen. Exactly. This is all going
cats.
On there while the regency had been ongoing. And I think George had been thinking to himself, let me get rid of my dumb wife before I'm king. And it didn't quite work out that way. George now really has a fire under him. He wants her gone. But the government knows how unpopular George is and how scandalous this could be. They offer Caroline about £6 million today to just stay away. And Caroline says, I'm in my queen era. And so she says,
I'm in my queen era.
She says goodbye to Bartolomeo and she returns to merry old England. At this point, like, riots break out when she makes her way back. Caroline's a figurehead for this growing radical movement that really hates her husband. But nevertheless, the king is still like, I have to get this divorce. And so he submits all of the evidence gathered in Milan about her affairs in these two green bags to the House of Lords. And the House of Lords appoints a secret committee to examine the evidence because they're like, we don't even want everyone in the House of Lords to look at this. This is so scandalous. We can't even trust all of us to see it. The committee says these green bags should never be shared, but they basically say that they contain allegations that deeply affect the honor of the queen, charging Her Majesty with an adulterous connection with a foreigner. The foreigner, of course, Bartolomeo.
Cool boy.
Have they not heard of Maria Fitzherbert and whoever the other one was? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's, well, we could get into it, but that is something that makes it more complicated. It would be much easier for George to get a divorce if he could prove that Caroline had been adulterous and he hadn't.
I'm sorry, so if he wasn't already a bigamist.
Exactly. And the other problem is it's very, very well documented that they have not been living as husband and wife. So if they had been living in the same household and she had had this affair, it would have been easier for him to be like, she broke this vow. They have plenty of paper on file that says everyone knows and they have an agreement that they're not living as man and wife. So it makes things much more complicated for George to get this divorce. In order to try to get it, I know, poor guy. So to try to get it, they try to get around this by using a bill of pains and penalties to deprive Caroline of her right to the title of queen consort and dissolve her marriage to George. And they read it at the House of Lords. Basically, it's the only way they can get this divorce to happen because of these weird loopholes of George sucking. So this reading of the bill becomes a weird mock trial. Like, it's not supposed to be, but there are witnesses called, there are cross-examinations. But it's worst of both worlds for Caroline because she's not permitted to speak at it and her lawyers aren't permitted to see the witness list before it comes up. It's like the worst of both worlds as far as what this trial could be. Ultimately, this bill is not submitted to the House of Commons because they just didn't think anyone would end up passing it. And to her friends, Caroline jokes she has indeed committed adultery once with the husband of Mrs. Fitzherbert.
100%.
Good line, good line.
Let's talk about one more good line. This is the good line that really sold this story to me. As all this is going on, like I was saying, it's literally the Napoleonic Wars. On May 5th, 1821, Napoleon dies. And a man named Sir Edmund Nagel informs King George, "Sir, your bitterest enemy is dead." And King George replies, "Is she, by God?"
Wow.
Oh, man. I mean, I hate him, but that's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
So this bill kind of fades away. It's not really going to pass. The government offers Caroline money again. She accepts it, but she wants to go out in a blaze of glory. And the coronation is coming up. Caroline feels like she should be there. No one else feels like Caroline should be there. They all tell her not to go. She shows up anyway. George has Caroline turned away from the coronation doors of Westminster Abbey. She tries both the doors at the East Cloister and the West Cloister. She's turned away publicly at both of those. She attempts to enter via Westminster Hall, which is where most of the guests are mingling. She's furious, and like the soldiers are literally holding bayonets to her, like, Your Highness, we can't let you in.
Yeah, I'm picturing the queen consort like trying to jimmy a window or something, you know? Like
She
just.
basically does all but that. She ends up like at the pier entrance, and finally a man named Sir Robert Inglis is like, "You have to go. You can't keep doing this." And she gets in her carriage. Unfortunately, in this moment, she loses a lot of support. A lot of people, like, I don't know if they think it's tacky or beneath her, but the crowds are jeering at her as she rides away from this moment. And to enter a little bit of a conspiracy corner altogether now, that night, Caroline falls ill. And over the next 3 weeks, she suffers more and more pain and her condition deteriorates. Finally, she dies on the 7th of August, less than a month from the coronation. Was it poison?
Yes, it
Going
was.
with yeah.
We can't know. Modern historians think it was maybe some kind of stomach cancer, but I mean, the timing is bonkers.
I think we could exhume that body and know.
Yeah, if we wanted to, maybe we could.
Arsenic lasts a real long time.
I bet the British royal family then would have something to say about the exhumation. Caroline requests to be buried in Brunswick. She is, and what she wants her coffin plate to read is, "Here lies Caroline, the injured Queen of England." George refuses to allow
I
that plate to be attached to the coffin.
bet.
And then during the coffin's like route of like its route from London, her supporters riot. Two people are killed, and they're like trying to get this coffin plate onto the coffin.
Oh, my.
It's insane. And eventually a coffin plate with just a Latin inscription is attached. This unofficial coffin plate still exists, and it's like belongs to the family of one of the Queen's executors. They occasionally send it out for historical exhibitions. And what like a crazy, like symbolic thing that like this coffin plate she wasn't allowed to use still exists and still moves
Isn't
around
that
free.
amazing?
And so that is the rather trashy marriage of Caroline of Brunswick and George IV. It makes me mad that he got what he wanted and that they weren't married anymore. But certainly, when people look back, it's her that's remembered fondly, and he is not remembered as a particularly great monarch, to my
You can
knowledge.
even count all the marriages in that one. Holy cat, Sam, thank you so much for bringing that to us today at Trashy Royals. Tell our listeners how they can find you and Allie on I'm Horrified.
Absolutely. Yes. So you guys have heard mention of my best friend Allie and I do I'm Horrified together. We're so thrilled to be part of the Hemlock Creatives family. You can find us at I'm Horrified. Tuesdays, we drop our new episodes every week.
Very cool. Y'all definitely check out I'm Horrified. They drop on Tuesday. Sam and Allie are just a bouquet full of horrific delight. We are
Absolutely.
definitely horror honeys.
Yes. Yes,
I'm
we are.
honored.
Thank you again, Sam, for coming on. We can't tell you how much we appreciate you. And friends, thank you so much for listening. We are going to be next week going somewhere a little different than England. We got a few more secret plans up our sleeves.
Until next week, friends, keep your eye on that throne.
Polish up that crown.
And know somebody more than 2 weeks before you marry them.
Brilliantly done. Thank you again, Sam. Big love, everybody. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye.